You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Welcome back to my adventures at the AKC Yukonuba Dog Championships, held in Long Beach, California, at the Long Beach Convention Center. Though the main event took place on Saturday and Sunday of early December, a plethora of events occurred in the preceding days. You can see video clips and tons of photos by going to the Facebook page www.facebook.com/AENC. We'll get back to the show right after this short commercial break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Be sure to tune in when Pet Life Radio goes live from Global Pet Expo, the world's largest annual pet products trade show. March 25th through the 27th, you can catch all the new products coming out for our pets before they even hit store shelves. From the latest in all-natural and eco-friendly products to the most elegant in pet pampering and high-tech innovations from companies all over the globe. It's at Global Pet Expo. Nearly 800 companies will be displaying new and exciting products to make time with our pets even better. Tune in March 25th through the 27th for everything Global Pet Expo.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Hello! I'm Deborah Wolf, and I'm inviting you to my animal party on Pet Life Radio. The dress code? Come as you are. Pajamas, a tux, you can even go naked like your pets. Unleash your party animal at my animal party. Guests you know from Animal Planet, TV, radio, the news, and bookstores will be joining me. And that's because after I won Best Pet Radio in America from the DWAA, I got my paw on the door and I met a lot of amazing people. And the best of the best are going to be coming to the party. They're coming to party with us. So join us at the animal party. Don't miss the party.
Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
The American Kennel Club Research Health Foundation has coupled advances in veterinary medicine and a desire by purebred breed clubs to promote only the best characteristics of their dogs. Listen to how science is enabling breeders to screen for potential genetic defects. Learn why having papers doesn't mean your pup is free of health risks. Dr. Bill Newman is with the AKC. What's your association with you?
I'm on the board of directors of the American Kennel Club.
All right.
I am the delegate to the American Kennel Club from the Master Club. I have 50 years experience in English Masters.
But right now we're in front of the Bernese Mountain Dog Club of America.
That's correct.
So you're telling me that these folks are marvelous and they're helping this breed.
Right.
How are they helping the breed?
Well, when the breed, and they will correct me if I'm wrong, this breed has some anatomic problems. And they work diligently on improving the soundness of these dogs so they wouldn't have dogs with hip dysplasia or other health issues. Now, these dogs are a working dog. They cart. They pull milk carts. They work in Switzerland, in mountains. And that's what they did. These people have diligently improved the health of their breed by health testing, investing in projects, and also insisting that every dog that enters a national show has a DNA certification.
What is the DNA? I'm sorry, we're speaking with?
Oh, I'm Renee Edwards.
Hi, Renee.
Hi, nice to meet you.
And Renee, you have a gorgeous Bernese right here on the floor.
She's 15 months.
What's the DNA testing for?
Well, it helps to make sure that the line is sound and that, like I said, I pick up any of the problems that would, as far as I know, would lead into other problems.
What happens with what we did with our health foundation, the American Kennel Club Research Health Foundation, we went to each individual breed and said, do a survey and tell us what your health problems are. So each breed would give us a list of what they felt were the three or four major problems. Then we would say, we're going to go out and solicit research in the major universities to find genetic markers that will help us not breed a dog with a defect. So we did testing and selective breeding, and they've improved the hip dysplasia problem in this breed tremendously.
So why should somebody, I want a Bernese Mountain Dog, and I can go to a breeder, and a pup is going to cost me X dollars, but boy, you know, there's somebody down the street who has a Mountain Dog, why can't I just go to them? Why should I go to a AKC breeder?
Because the Bernese Mountain Club, Dog Club, and the Master Club, and the other parent clubs will say, these are the tests that we should do on the male and the female before they breed them. We will not sell you a dog that we know has a problem, and we will not, most of our people will stand behind the dog, say that if there's a problem with our dog, come back to me. In other words, we don't sell the dog, pocket the money, and run away. We are here to promote the breed, and the object is to breed a healthy, better dog, so it's happy with the family.
Now, people hear about puppy mills, and they purchase a puppy, and it comes with papers. Is that going to be their safeguard?
No. No. The difference is, in the American Kennel Club, and the parent clubs that we have, they do the testing, they stand behind the dog, they're there to help. Most breeders will have a contract and say to you, if you have a problem, I will take the dog back. I will assist you. You have the club behind you to help. The difference of the American Kennel Club has created a problem. We have made purebred dogs desirable. So therefore, we've created a market. We cannot fill the numbers of dogs because we do not breed prolifically. We breed carefully after testing and thinking it out. So now we have people wanting a dog and we can't supply it. So the puppy mills come in and they're the ones who are creating the dog supply. And people will say, well, I'm not going to breed the dog. I'm not going to show the dog. Why do I need an AKC dog? Because we are the people who worry about the health issues, who breed carefully. We're the one to make sure that we're doing the best we can, and we stand behind. You're buying into a family. You buy the dog, but you're buying the Bernese Mountain family.
She is my first dog,
yes,
and for her, I was actually interviewed.
So your first dog ever?
No, my first dog, Bernese Mountain
Dog. Right.
And so I had to go through an interview process. They had someone come to my house, look at my house, see where it was there, and I mean, which is great. And then with the breeder that I went through, she actually reimburses me for every test that I do. It's, you know, you have to, you know, under our contract, you are to do this and this. In 6 months or so, she'll be in for her x-rays, and I'll send her the receipt. She'll reimburse me the amount for the x-rays to make sure everything's okay, etc. So I think the breeders here are very careful about trying to make sure that, number one, they're going to a good family, and they have a good home, and then from there that the line is improved. So they really work diligently on that.
Right.
Dr. Newman, I love your analogy where you're buying into the family. You're not just buying a dog, you're buying into the family.
And what the lady mentioned the fact that when you go to get a dog from a reputable American Kennel Club breeder, they interrogate you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
Are you worthy
you.
For this dog?
Are you worthy? Some people will say, well, I have to see your family, and you must come and bring the children and see if you interact before I can let you have the puppy. They're very concerned. They just don't let it go. Then what happens if a dog comes in a bad situation, every parent club has its own rescue. We take the dogs back.
Yes.
We rehabilitate them. They neuter them. And then they find a proper home after temperament testing.
I think it's like, down there. Fantastic.
Kathy's the head of the rescue so she does all the rescues for our area, for our breeders.
Well, I think the listeners now have learned a lot more, myself included, about why you really should go to an AKC-approved breeder. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
So we are talking about
Tibetan Mastiffs.
So Tibetan Mastiffs, since this is on radio, explain Mastiff, you think large. And these honeys are gorgeous and large. How much do they typically weigh?
110, 20 pounds. They are not a giant breed. They are a large breed.
Okay.
So people look at them and think, oh my God, you know, St. Bernard, whatever, how big do they get? They're a large breed.
Right.
They do have a specified minimum standard of 26 inches high at the withers. So
a breed that people would be more familiar with, what else would be about 26 inches? Like German Shepherd?
St. Bernard.
St. Bernard, all right.
Okay, but they're considered a giant breed.
Okay.
Leonbergers, Rottweilers are a little, not quite as tall, but they're very important for people to understand that this is a large breed. We are not presenting them as a Great Dane.
Looks like a large puppy the way this one's playing around right now, just trying to give love nibbles.
Right.
Describe to the listening audience, what is Tibetan Terrier?
Mastiff.
Look, I'm looking across the way.
Right.
Mastiff looks like.
What does it look like?
Colors.
All colors are acceptable except white.
Oh, yeah.
Black and tan, the red. We have blue, light blue, which is a sort of a gray black.
Personalities, they look like lovers.
Their personality is supposed to be calm, collected. They're thinking all the time. When they're laying like this, they know exactly what's going on. They are never to be aggressive. They are to be, they are a guardian dog, but they are not an aggressive protection dog.
I will just sit on you and you will not do it again.
Well, the point is that unlike a Rottweiler or a Doberman, those are aggressors. These dogs stop and think. They evaluate a situation. They do not just look at somebody and say, I don't like you, and go after them. This is what they do.
Get love is what they're getting right now. Lots of petting. Where do they originate?
Tibet.
All right. That's why the very heavy coat. Excuse me, I need more loving. Yes. So are they good with families?
I'm sorry?
Are they good with families?
Absolutely. They actually, in Tibet, they're chained out on the family property, and they're taught to protect the property. But with the family, they're wonderful with the family. They're very loving in the family, but they also recognize strangers that should not come into the family. And so they will let those people know you are not supposed to be on this property.
And dogs like this, being a large breed dog, are they prone to having many of those large breed dog problems, hip problems, elbow problems, etc.?
They will have hip problems. They will have elbow problems. This is why we do x-rays. This is why we're very careful with the breeding program. It's very careful with the food we feed. In general, they're a very healthy breed. But you do have to be careful with hips because they are a large breed and they do carry a very massive amount of weight. And they can have very enormous bone.
How did you get involved with Tibetan Mastiffs?
I started with Great Danes.
You like them big?
Well, actually, I started with Great Danes. I had Pembroke Welsh Corgis. I now have also the companion to the Tibetan Mastiff, the Tibetan Spaniels. So I wanted a Tibetan Mastiff because they complement the Tibetan Spaniels. They work together. The Tibetan Spaniel is a temple dog. They have extremely good eyesight. They sit on the wall and they guard from the wall, and they have five specific sounds. And the Tibetan Mastiff is on the ground with the sheep and the yak and the herds, and the Tibetan Spaniel communicates with the Tibetan Mastiff.
So it's kind of your sentinel that's up there telling.
Exactly. That's what they do.
I see how they work together.
So it's very fascinating because he guards property.
This is a real dog.
And he listens to the Tibetan Spaniels. If the Tibetan Spaniels start making a specific sound, he's up. He wants to know what's wrong.
Well, for those who can't see, right now we're in a breed hall with all the various breeds of dogs. And Tibetan Spaniels, explain what they look like. Since we now know the Mastiff is a large dog, not a giant dog, is fluffy, is wonderful, and is getting just oodles of love here.
Yeah.
But what's a Spaniel?
A Tibetan Spaniel is not a true Spaniel. It's also from Tibet. It's about 11 inches tall, and they come in all colors. They weigh about 13, 14 pounds when they're large. They have a shortish muzzle. They're a small breed. They carry their tail over their back, just like the Tibetan Mastiff. They have, unlike the Tibetan Mastiff, they have an undershot mouth, undershot bite, which is required according to the standard. The Tibetan Mastiff has what we call a scissor bite. That's a very important difference. But their purposes, one guards the ground, one guards the people and the temple, and they were warming dogs for the monks. And the monks would carry them and they would keep them warm, sleep with them. They're very amazing little dogs, and these guys are equally amazing with a far calmer temperament.
Well, they are beautiful dogs. Any health issues in particular for the Tibetan Spaniels?
With the Tibetan Spaniels, we have to be very careful for PRA, eye problems. Basically, they're very healthy also.
Great.
A wonderful little breed.
And could you describe what a Tibetan Spaniel looks like a little bit more? I'm looking at it and some people might say, oh, it looks like a Pekingese.
You could say that it is, I don't know. I've seen them for so many years that to me...
Nothing would look like it other than a Tibetan Spaniel.
Their muzzles can be mistaken for a Pekingese, but then you've got a very incorrect Tibetan Spaniel.
Longish coat, very silky.
Longish coat. They have a slightly bowed front, which is required by the standard, but not overly so that they look like they're deformed.
Okay, good.
But the standard calls for a slightly bowed front. And unlike the Tibetan Mastiffs, who have a perfectly wonderful straight front, very powerful straight front, they have long hair-like, rabbit-like feet. The Tibetan Mastiff has a tight cat, tight foot. Very important for the work on the ground and climbing in the mountains of Tibet. The Tibetan are a double coat.
So why they were keeping the monks warm?
Oh yes. Their temperaments are quite different than the Tibetan masters. I mean, we have some very yappy, not so nice Tibetan spaniels. We cannot have that in the Tibetan masters. These dogs.
Very calm. All these people are walking by, and they're just laying there, just hanging out.
But what people don't realize is that while they're laying there looking innocent, they're hearing and seeing everything.
They're aware constantly.
Totally.
These are beautiful animals, Linda. Thank you so much for sharing your information.
I don't know what else I can really tell you.
Other than you're in love with Tibetan dogs.
Yes.
Alright, so I'm here right now in front of the Swedish Valhund exhibit with Ivy Underdahl, and she has a gorgeous dog here by the name of Blaze. So explain, what is a Swedish Valhund?
Swedish Valhund is a cattle herding dog, a farm dog from Sweden that they believe go back to the Viking times, and they have been farm dogs forever, and you just keep asking Swedes and they keep going farther and further back. They almost went into extinction, and a couple of men actually collected them from the farms and started the breed back up in Sweden, and they became an official breed again.
I love it. Describe what it looks like.
People compare them to a corgi, but once you get corgi side by side, you can see the difference. They do have a short leg and a longer back.
Kind of a body that almost coloring looks like an elk hound.
Yeah, they have the coloring like an elk hound. There's a gray sable and a red sable. Their unique qualities are that they can be born, one litter can have all different kinds of tails, a natural bob, a spitz curly tail, a sort of a saber tail, German shepherd tail, and no tail at all. They have an incredible herding instinct, about 98% or so when you put them on stock, will go. They will know what, I know I'm supposed to move these, I'm not sure where, but I'm going to do it. So they have a herding instinct. They also have a loud bark, so they protect, property as far as alert. They let you know when people are coming up the driveway. And they're beautiful. They have an incredible expression, and they hook into their humans like they're part of you. And they never leave your side. Great family pet. You'll never go to the bathroom or take a shower alone again. They go everywhere with you, and if you can take them to work or go, and do things together like hiking and stuff, they will love it. They want to do stuff. They're not a super high-energy dog like like a terrier. They're more like, keep me busy because I need to think. They're a thinking dog. So we do musical freestyle and herding and agility.
Musical freestyle, yes. Explain.
Blaze and I dance together.
Oh, fun.
Yes, and he has his...
What type of music do you like, Blaze?
Yes, he likes country, but I like a little bit more pop. So we dance to Singing in the Rain and stuff. Yes, sir, say hi. And he was born loving all humans and dogs. That's just how he was.
And does he like other cats and bunnies and things
like
that?
Yes, we have cats. I don't know if I'd put him around bunnies, but I do know his granddaughter lives with bunnies and cats, and they're all fine. But he's a herding dog, so he probably annoys the cats to no end.
You're going to stay in this one room and not move.
Yes, all right. So keep control. They are kind of control freaks. They want to know when the whole family's together, they're happy. And when they're apart, they want to know where they are. So they're very much, it's all the herding instinct for, 1,000 years or so.
Any medical issues?
There is a research being done on an eye, something they're finding in the dogs that has sort of a modeling in the eye. So they're trying to find a marker and see if that's something we need to look at. But other than that, they're overall really healthy breeds.
I love it.
And their longevity is, they can go 15 to 18 years.
Good at the time.
Long time commitment if you want one of these puppies.
Great. Well, Ivy, thank you so much. I appreciate learning a little bit right now about Swedish Valhund.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and you're listening to my adventures at the 2009 AKC Yukonuba Dog Championships, held at the Long Beach Convention Center in California. After this short break, I'm going to help debunk the impression that pit bulls are dogs to be feared and meet a breeder of the most unusual dog at the show. You can see pictures of all of these dogs on our website at the Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com. Keep listening.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
This valuable information comes from your pet. There's nothing like a wagging tail or friendly paw to lift your mood. They're therapeutic and make us feel good. Studies show pets even reduce stress, prevent heart disease, lower blood pressure, and fight depression. So there you have it. Pets are a daily dose of good health and happiness. Pets add life. To learn more, visit petsaddlife.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
So it's Pyrenees Shepherd.
Think of like perennial flowers.
Okay. Fill in the rest of that. And your name?
We call him Pure Shep.
Pure Shep, that works.
It's easier to remember.
I like that one.
And I'm Trudy.
All right,
Trudy. My name is Kim.
K-I-M?
M-M.
M-M, all right. So, tell me about this breed that I know little about. What does it look like for those who are listening?
Well, there's two of them out there right now.
But since we're on the radio.
Right. We have two varieties. One is the smooth face, one is the rough face. Size-wise, they're basically 15 and a half inches up to 20 and a half inches. They are a very intelligent dog. They were bred in the Pyrenees Mountains to be the drover dogs. The Great Pyrenees are the guardian dogs that keep the predators away, and they work in conjunction with the Pear Sheps on moving the flocks within the valleys of the mountains.
So would the Pear Sheps be more of the sentinel dog? Say, hey, Great Pyrenees, there's something that's coming, now you can take over.
I'm the
intelligence, you're the brawn.
Exactly, I got to take care of the sheep, you got to go handle the problem.
I like that, okay, that sounds good. Are they good with children, good with other pets?
If they are socialized with other pets and with children, they are very, very good. They do require a lot of early socialization. You can't just leave them home and then think you're going to take them out to a situation like this and have them go, oh, people, I love it. The standard says that they can be reserved, and if they aren't socialized, they will be reserved.
So you say you have a new puppy, so you're fairly new to the breed. Why did you decide, this is a breed for me?
My main breed was Australian Shepherds, and I was in them for 20-some years. Got a Canaan dog, which is a totally different ball game, and I was looking for another Aussie, and I was at a dog show and I got what I call a flyby by a pure Shep. I was sitting by the ring and all of a sudden this cute fussy dog was in my face, kissing me, flying around, and then he went flying to the next person. And I went, and it was the first one that I had seen in person. I had only seen pictures. And I went, I got to investigate that breed more.
And I also have large dogs, and I wanted something smaller.
A little transportable.
Well, yes, and I like having a breed that not everyone has. I like the size, and they're tough little dogs. I get out there with my belt, it's right in the middle of everything, and it doesn't faze them a bit. They're fast, and they're tough little dogs.
So you say there's not a lot of them in the United States. Is it hard to find a breeder?
Yes, and there can be a waiting list depending on the timing. There are some people that have waited as long as 2 years.
I
lucked into it that I called at just the right time and got a puppy reserve that somebody else had backed down on. And he didn't turn out, and I ended up with a different dog from a different litter. And I'm so glad I got him.
Any particular health issues for these animals?
They're pretty healthy. A mild dysplasia problem, a mild eye problem, but compared to a lot of breeds, they're in really, really good shape.
Are these considered more of a small dog versus, you know, large dog, giant dogs?
They're small to medium, I would say, because the bottom of the standard is 15 and a half inches, and the top of the standard is 20 inches, so that kind of falls into the medium-sized dogs.
How about their longevity?
This year has been a bad year for losing old-timers. We lost several 17-year-old dogs.
17 is a very good age. That's awesome. Great. Well, I appreciate this, Trudy. Thank you very much for bringing my listeners and myself up the curve on the name of the breed.
Pyrenean Shepherd.
Pyrenean Shepherds. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, I'm here at the AKC Yukonuba Dog Show, and I'm standing in front of a Rastafarian-looking dog. It's a Poolie, and with the breeder and shower and lover, I can tell, of Anita Rittenhour. So, Anita, thank you very much. I appreciate this.
It's not.
Well, people would say it looks like a Rastafarian dog, all these little ropes and curls, but I see you have a younger one here who doesn't have as tightly curled. Is it naturally occurring, or do you have to sit there and curl the coat?
It is naturally occurring. It grows that way, but I kind of like to qualify that by saying it grows that way with owner intervention. So, in other words, at 8 to 10 months of age, they start to get their undercoat and then the wiry outer coat, which kind of intertwine and forms basically mass. And so, what we do at that point is what we're doing with this young dog to separate those into the cords, because even as a puppy, you'll see their coat tends to hang in natural ringlets, and so that's when we start making the separations.
So some people will sit there and maybe crochet at night or do crossword puzzles. You sit there and you start cording your dog's coat.
That's correct.
Now, it would seem grooming might be difficult for shampooing or getting down to the skin and coat. Are there a lot of tricks to this?
Well, there are tricks, and ones I've developed is I have a regular dog grooming tub in my, built into my laundry room, and I particularly do not put shampoo right out of the bottle directly on the coat. It would just take too much rinsing to get out of this corded coat, as you can see. I take in my dog tub, it's a commercial dog tub, a small one, and I put the shampoo in the tub, and I basically make a bubble bath out of it.
Sounds fun.
I teach my dogs from the very beginning when I start bathing them to lie down in the tub. And then I fill the tub up to probably about breastbone level or at the base of the neck. And then I, rather than shampooing the coat directly, I'm taking that bubble bath water and squeezing it through the coat like you would a bulky sweater if you're washing it by hand.
I love it. Describe a Poolie. So, size of dog, how much it typically weighs.
A Poolie is, I would call it a medium-sized dog, small to medium. Males are 16 to 18 inches at the shoulder, and this is as described in the AKC standard. And the females are 15 to 17 inches at the shoulder. They typically weigh 25 to 35 pounds. And they're active, agile, and very intelligent.
What were they bred for?
They're, as you can see by our pictures up here, they are bred for herding sheep in Hungary.
Now, I see there's white ones and black ones. They come in various colors.
They come in white and black and silver gray. There also is a color which is more prevalent in Europe and not necessarily recognized by the AKC. We call it FAKO, F-A-K-O, which is more like a apricot, brindled apricot. Those are very rare, and you don't see too many of them. I can't say that they're not showable, but they're not described in the AKC standard, which has no disqualifications, so you can read into that what you'd like.
You can show, but it's probably not going to win.
It's probably not going to win. It's going to send the judge to his book on the standard, but there have been actually FAKO dogs that have finished.
Very
so
good.
I won't say they're not finishable, but it's very unlikely. Very good.
So with these dogs, they're herding dogs. Are they good with children, other pets?
They're good with their own children, and they're described as sensibly suspicious of strangers. Now, this puppy here has not read that part of the standard, which to me is quite refreshing. You can see this dog is a little bit more standoffish.
And you're very cute.
But if you come into my house and are there as a guest, once he gets to know you, he's just fine. So some poolies are a little bit more wary of strangers than some other breeds. This being the great exception.
The baby says, everyone's my friend.
Well, and, you know, I've done, I think, what I consider a really exceptionally good job of starting her off from the very beginning as far as puppy classes and socializing, and so she's just a delight.
Now, this is a breed that has a lot of hair in its face. Do you run into eye problems? People would say, can it actually see because it has all this hair?
Well, it's kind of like if you were looking, had your face right up against the Venetian blind. They see through those cords. Some fully people do tie up their dog's top knots. But in reality is, as a herding dog on the dusty plains of Hungary, this protected the eyes. Now, I mean, the has what we, the scientific name for it is eye goobers. Eye goobers, right?
I call it that all the time.
I knew a veterinarian would call it eye goobers.
Eye goobers, yes.
Like, you know, you pick out the eye goobers.
We all wake up in the morning with eye goobers,
that's
so yes.
Right. And so you, but they don't have anything unusually specific as far as eye problems are concerned.
Any other general health concerns?
Reputable poolie breeders do the testing for things that all other people do, you know, hips, patellas, elbows, eye exams.
Another good reason to get a dog from an AKC breeder.
Exactly, and they do, you know, Kisser von Willebrand's and whatever other
thyroids.
Right. Yes, exactly.
She's just in the process.
Anita, with your poolies, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So I'm here right now with Gary Gardner, and he has a breed of dog that is just precious. I don't think I've ever seen one. Norwegian Lundehund.
Lundehund.
Lundehund. So tell me about Norwegian Lundehund, which I gather came from Norway.
Norway. These dogs are actually a Spitz-type dog that came from little islands off of Norway, the Faroe Islands, and they evolved to hunt puffins, which are like a penguin, a small penguin-y sort of a bird.
And that's a niche market.
There's not much else on those islands to eat. The scientists think that they got stuck over on the islands after the last ice age. So they were over there, and then when the ice retreated, they were left on the islands. So they evolved certain adaptations to let them hunt the only thing left to eat, which were puffins. So they've developed extra toes. They all have six toes at least, and fully functional two thumbs. They have a collarbone. Much
so it
like,
looks like they have double dew claws front and back.
Claws, right. But they're actually fully formed toes, and they've got a different pad on the back, so that it all helps them to climb cliffs. The puffins nest in scree fields and inside the rocks, and so these dogs have to be able to climb really steep cliffs to be able to get to the puffins.
Here's the pads.
So they're elongated pads. And
they have very interesting looking feet. So on that big pad on the bottom, which we think is typically being a little heart-shaped, theirs is elongated.
Yes.
So extra traction for making it up those mountain sides.
The slippery rocks. Because in Norway, it's wet a lot.
Uh-huh.
So the rocks are really, really slick. And I mean, we've been to Norway several times, and they use them. They use the cloy.
Those are tough little toes.
They'll splay them out and be able to climb down and down or up. They also have a collarbone very much like humans, so that they can spread their legs up like this. So, and that lets them get really flat. They can turn their heads around.
So right now, spreading their little arms, it was like a spread eagle,
yeah, just
totally
like a
flat.
Sticking their arms straight out to the side. Then they can turn their heads around kind of like an owl, or tip them all the way back to the back. Just totally flexible in all directions.
So we're doing the exorcist routine now.
Yes, exactly.
Have a nice dog.
Yeah, if you actually saw a dog do this normally, you'd think there was...
And it's time to leave.
We've actually seen people, because the judges occasionally ask for us to show them, and you see people in the audience go,
cringing. Well, veterinarians oftentimes do that with neurological testing to see if there's pain in the neck. These guys are flexible like cats.
Yeah, they just think, well, okay, cool. They also can voluntarily close their ears, which helps them keep dirt and debris out of their ears. And you'll see them fold them forward. It's a very odd sort of look.
They can
bend them right in half. Will she hold them? Anyway, so
it's probably very good in that wet environment, too, so they don't get ear infections as much water getting down the ears.
It keeps the sand and the dust and the water when they're going into the nests for the birds. They can close them off so the dirt doesn't get down into their ear.
No bird guano, so there,
sure.
Yes. Important.
The puffins stands almost as tall as these dogs, so they have to be pretty tenacious to get the birds out of these nests.
About how many inches tall at the shoulders and how many pounds?
The males are 13 to 15 inches and the females are 12 to 14.
So they're smallish dogs.
Yes. This is actually appropriately sized females height-wise, and this is an appropriate sized male, and you can tell the difference in the heads. Definitely a more feminine head versus a more masculine head. The head is a little bigger, and their weight is supposed to be proportionate.
Right. As opposed to.
And any dog can enjoy their cookies more than others. So we have one dog here.
These guys have an avocado
figure.
Fetish.
Yes. Which is good for the coat, but we have to be careful. Yes.
Right. Well, too much. So.
But they're supposed to be proportionate. I mean, obviously, dogs that are in agility, they will look muscular, but they'll weigh more because they're heavier. So there is no weight standard in the standard. No weight because of the fact that agility dogs are going to be a heavier dog.
Are these considered sporting breed then?
Non-sporting.
Yeah. All right.
We're hoping that AKC will split the classes like they've been talking about. They have it on hold right now, but they would go into the northern group if they do that.
So what would they were bred then for going after the puffins, and now they're being used for what?
They're mostly just for pets and for, they're very, very gentle, good pals. They just seem to hang around with you. They like to snuggle. So as a house dog, they're terrific. But you can also take them out on the trails and go hiking, and they're a great outdoor adventure dog, but with the advantage of having a real nice pet.
Good around children?
Super good.
Very much.
They're very gentle dogs.
Very much. In fact, they take food, and if you give them food,
they'll follow you anywhere.
They won't bite you to take it. They'll wait until you release it.
Our cat's the alpha animal in our house by far. So they just as soon go along and get along.
Any particular health issues that they have?
They have the same health issues that a lot of the Spitz breeds have, the gastrointestinal issues. But it's nothing that can't be handled if you're paying attention to your dog.
They are sensitive to certain grains.
Right.
A lot of people feed them a grain-free or a very low-grain diet.
So finding the diet that works best for them.
Yeah. They're very individual, because I mean, we've got a couple of them that are, I'm told, grain free, and a couple of them that'll eat anything, including colored styrofoam. So I mean, it's a very individual thing for each dog. But we try to keep their diet as natural as we can, and obviously the stress level down, because the stress level can upset us in this time.
And it does it to the people here at the dog show also right now. We're talking right now with Gary Gardner. And I'm sorry, your name?
My name is Tracy Russo.
Hi, Tracy. Nice. Thank you so much. And we are with Norwegian Lunderhunds.
Lunderhunds.
Thank you very much. Swiss poster. There we are. Well, I'm here right now actually taking a rest, laying sitting down with some dogs that people might look at going, I think this is a bull terrier or a pit bull. And this is actually, it looks like a nursery.
It is. It's a nanny dog nursery. The Staffordshire Bull Terrier is.
And I'm speaking right now with Christina Eastland.
Yes. The Staffordshire Bull Terrier is historically known as the nanny dog because of their affinity for children. They're completely kid-proof and kid-tolerant, meaning your child can bite, chew, grab, stick, poke, pull, gnaw, and they just tolerate it. They absolutely love people.
Now, Christina, do some people look at this and say, oh, this is a pit bull and this is a nasty kind of habit?
Typically, they'll call it a mini pit bull, but it's not. Yeah. It's the original of all the bull breeds. The Staffordshire Bull Terrier and the Bull Terrier were the original two bull and terriers. The pit bull and the American Staffordshire Terrier about 200 years ago came from the Staffordshire Bull Terrier.
So they're very
completely different dogs because it's purebred for generations of just purebred Staffordshire Bull Terrier breed. They're bomb proof. They're really not a great guard dog. They're very stocky. They're more like a bulldog than they are like their terrier.
Vicious is licking my nose off.
They're completely in love with people.
Okay. Don't
they are love bugs.
I'm enjoying that.
They are kind of Velcro-y. A lot of people were not big fans of the breed because they're needy. They want to be everywhere you are. It's in the bathroom, on the couch, in the bed. They're not a crate dog. They're not a kennel dog. They're not an outside dog. They're an inside,
but
indoor.
It's a good bedside dog because they really are small.
Small, compact, no hair, easy to keep clean, 40 pounds max, 16 inches tops.
Depends on how old
they get along with all breeds.
If you get
they can be run together with different dogs. I have a French bulldog as well as four Staffords. I never have a problem. My sister has English Cockers and a Collie.
There was another male dog.
I just dropped the Staffords right down on the ground. Go. They're not an aggressive breed. They're just a really cool, compact, awesome-looking, almost human-esque breed of dog.
Because at and they love kissing.
Yes.
Yes, kissing is this.
This is Maxine.
Maxine, very cute. She's very petite.
Maxine's mommy. She's retired. She's seven. She's spayed. She's a champion. And she is. You can see the femininity in her versus the masculinity of dog.
She has a smaller, little petite head.
Mm-hmm. Very angelic, very wise eyes.
Very strong.
As opposed to Goofball over there, is a big big doofus, meatball.
Any particular health issues that these dogs have?
You know, health issues go in and out of all breeds. We don't have any right now. Occasionally, somebody will have allergies, but they're their children.
Yeah, we really like that.
Like she was saying, you don't and I've had the breed since I was eight. I've had them for 33 years. There was a couple of kennels that had dysplasia at one point, but we don't have. We help tests, but we don't have any diseases. We are, as long as you breed healthy dogs,
they're very trainable. They're very smart,
healthy, happy, wonderful dogs.
Are they very common breed, or it seems like people?
This is almost a rare breed.
Yeah, this one.
We have about 350 registered a year with the AKC. They are not well known. They are not a high profile. They are not massively bred. We are very close knit, and we like it that way. This is a special breed that, in the wrong hands, they could be a bad dog. But this is what you get. I mean, you look at this and you go, "Oh my God, this is what I want." People that have pit bulls, I think, want this kind of dog and don't know that we're here. And it's funny because a lot of Stafford fanciers are people that started out in either pit bulls or Amstaffs and then went, "Oh my God."
That's a great little breed.
I need to go find Tanner right.
Well, thank you. I think I've learned a lot that this is not the pit bull. These are just sweet, loving dogs. And I can see why you have this display as you do, that it's a nursery, because they are just lovers.
Lovers. Love their children. They're awful. They'll see a kid and dump you in 2 seconds. "Oh, look, it's a kid. It's my size. I can kiss it. He's not going to push me away."
I love it. Thank you so much, Christine. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm here right now with a breed of dog that is probably one of the most unique ones I've seen here at the show, whose name I know is the most unique in the show, and I won't even try and pronounce it, but the breeder is Kathy Lawson. And Kathy, the breed is?
Sholo It's Squeaky.
It's Squeaky.
Yeah.
And and I'm Hispanic, and it doesn't roll off my tongue. So it's an Aztec word, or we're sorry.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the breed.
Well, Xolo was taken from the word Xolot, which is the god to the afterlife, and it's really is what the natives down there call dogs. So that's where the name comes from.
It's a Mexican
Of
origin.
This dog is over 3,000 years old. The breed is over 3,000 years old. They found them in the Kalima jungles. This is not a man-made or tampered with breed. It's naturally hairless. It evolved this way. The Indians found this dog, domesticated it, and used it literally for everything. They hunted with it. They traveled with it. It was a guard dog for them. It was a work dog for them. They bred them small for companionship. They put them in beds with babies, like hot water bottles. The Mayan Indians believe them to have medicinal healing powers because they're so warm, because they don't have a coat. They're not any warmer than a normal dog. But because they're so warm, if you sleep with them and you have back spasms or you have arthritis or gout,
who needs a heating pad, you put Zola next to you. All right.
Right. It's a very primitive breed. It's a very intelligent breed.
Is it fairly new in AKC recognition?
Or? We were in before, and then the numbers dropped so low that they put us out. And we just recently, 2 years ago, got back in.
Are they very common now?
No, you're not. Yeah, they're not seeing a lot of them. That's why we're out like this trying to educate the public. We will be going into full competition in 2011, so you'll be seeing more and more of them. And we are working on bringing them in from out of the country so that we don't have a closed-off bloodline. So
some people have seen, you know, the hairless chihuahua. Mm-hmm. That might be one of the best ways to describe what they look like. But here in front of me, tell me the approximate sizes, males and females. We're now standing up. A little bit more.
Yeah.
More like a small Labrador?
Well, standard size can run up to 24 at the shoulder, and they have a very similar look to them, like a feral hound, because they are a primitive, prick-eared dog. They have more substance to their body. So they're approximately the size of a good, healthy Doberman,
okay.
I think.
And longevity?
A standard size like this should be able to live 14 to 17 years. Smaller toy sizes maybe up to 20 if they're well taken care of.
Now, some people might look at this going, it must be a hypoallergenic dog because it has no fur.
There is no such thing as a hyperallergenic dog. The reason these dogs work really well in people that have asthma and stuff is strictly because there's no hair. There's no shedding, and you don't have a lot of dander. But if somebody's allergic to a dog, they're going to be allergic to this. So we tell people, meet them, touch them, play with them, spend some time. If it's going to work for you, you're going to know. If it isn't, then probably no dog is going to.
Being a hairless dog, are they more prone to having skin issues?
I hear that a lot. That seems to be one of the beliefs. When they're young and their skin and their sebaceous glands are growing and stuff like that, we do see acne in them, just like we do in kids. But when they become full grown and that skin stretches all the way out, we don't see a lot of problems with it unless it's in a line. And they have beautiful, strong, it feels like a fine leather bag.
It's a very nice soft coat.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful to sleep with. They're like permanent hot water bottles. You know, they're just, it's a really nice dog.
Now you have another dog on the table. It was a smallish baby who's being hidden right now. Is that a youngster?
This is actually a toy.
Okay.
Toy variety. They come in three sizes, small, medium, and large. We have something for everybody. And this is a coated variety of exactly the same breed.
I was going to say, wait a minute, it has a coat.
Yeah, they're born in the litter. The coated ones are born in the litter with the hairless ones. And they help to keep the hairless babies warm because the litters can be pretty big, and this helps to generate some heat in there with the hairless babies. Temperament is exactly the same, or supposed to be the same, but I actually find my little coated kids are actually a little bit better in temperament when they're young. And they're just really intelligent and they're very people-oriented. So it's not a breed you can force to do something, but they want to make you happy. So they're really easy to work with.
I love it. One more time, Kathy, the name of the breed is?
Xolo Itzcuic.
And I'll keep working on that one.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Kathy.
All right, thank you.
So I'm here right now with Frances Connor and Monica Davi with a breed that a lot of people misunderstand. And we're in an area, tremendous number of people going by. These dogs are extremely well behaved, very friendly, and some people would be very surprised because I'm talking about American Staffordshire Terriers. Why the bad rap for these dogs? Because these are awesome dogs.
I think because
big part of it is they are very devoted to people. They are people dogs, and they will do anything for their people. And if their people want to train them to be vicious and to be a guard dog, which is not a natural thing to them, they're easily trainable that way because they love their family and their people so much.
So they're following directions. It's not innately their problem. It's a human problem again. What were they bred for? So you say they're not guard dogs. What were they bred for originally?
They're originally bred to be a farm dog here in America. They, like most terriers, they were ratters. They could...
They're going after very large rats.
They could. A lot of them do herding, just like some of the herding breeds. They were the family dog. They could lay on the back porch and bark if somebody came up.
What's their average size?
We have, the AKC standard gives us a preferred size, and we are to follow that, and that's another one of the big differences between an American Staffordshire Terrier and an American Pitbull Terrier, and that's the size.
And which one's larger?
The Pitbull Terrier.
These dogs should be, a male should be between 18 and a half to 19 inches. Female, 17 and a half to 18 and a half.
So they're a solid dog, but they're not a huge dog.
No. They should be a moderate dog. They're very athletic. They're very muscular. They're keenly aware of their surroundings. They're great companion dogs. Like Monica said, they love their people. They will do anything for their people. And they're very intelligent, and whatever you train them to do, they will do, because you're their owner. They want to please you. That is probably what you would say their ambition in life is, to please the human that owns them.
Are they a difficult breed to train, or are they fairly highly trainable?
No more so than any other terrier. I mean, they are a terrier breed. They are a cross between the bulldog and an old English white terrier. And any terrier...
So being a terrier, it's high-energy dog.
High-energy dog. They get bored very easily with training. You have to make the training fun and reward-based. And
sounds like a lot of children, I know.
Yeah, sure. Once again, and they learn very rapidly, so they can become bored if the owner doesn't perhaps realize that they're already trained and they're repeating the same. The dog is like, I know this already. Let's go on. Move on to something else. That's kind of their trainability.
Any particular health issues that these pets have?
Like all dogs, all purebred dogs, I would say about the same things that concern all purebred dog owners.
So we have to worry about the hips,
dysplasia,
elbows,
cancer, of course. Overall, they're a pretty healthy breed.
Would it be a good first breed for anyone? Or they should work up to a American Staffordshire Terrier?
I think a person should work up to any terrier, period. A terrier is not a breed for everyone, especially a large terrier, an Airedale Terrier or an American Staffordshire Terrier. They're very large terriers, but they have the same qualities a lot of times as a smaller little terrier. And that can be a bit difficult for new people. So it's not a first breed for everybody.
One of the things I think I enjoy the most about talking to all these various breeders, it seems as though breeders really try to place the right person with the right dog. You're very concerned that this is going to be the right match. That's great. Well, I appreciate giving us a little information that these dogs that too often get the bad reputation, it's really the person, it's not the dog. Thank you.
Sure.
Dog shows are a great way to learn about the breed of dog you own or may want to add to your family in the future. Not in the market for a dog? You can also find very unique treats, supplements, collars, toys, and grooming products at these events. Try to find a way to get a little bit more exercise in your life than that of your canine companion. Dog shows like the AKC Yukonuba Dog Championships have demonstrations on herding, fly ball, and agility. Can't get your dog out of the water? Dock diving competitions might just earn you some dog food money. Listen in next week for the third installment of A Day in the Life of a Veterinarian, enjoying the heck out of herself at a dog show. Thanks to all the passionate and informative canine connoisseurs I met and interviewed. I love learning. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and you've been listening to The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.